the Rocket Man. Rocket Man.
Rocket Man. Wow, here we go again. Trump's winding up the tweets. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. And folks, I want to thank you back to the Rested Culture Podcast. And as always, feel free to share this with your friends. Tell them they can find us at www.rustedculture.com. They can always find us right there. And that's an easy way to get you right to the podcast. And as you know, right now, and we're going to start off the podcast with the Russian investigation, just to kind of kick this off. And we're always going to try to do that going forward, just to give you the basics on some of the changes and what's new with it. And right now, as you know, Robert Mueller isn't going to come out, and he's not going to refute the tapestry of deceit that we're seeing from Republicans and the calls to discredit his investigation. He's not going to do that. And folks, that's what our job is to look at what we know today and hold these truths up to everyone to refute some of what we can see and believe is patently false and misleading by Trump's henchmen. And folks, that's how we resist Trump in this movement, and that's what we're doing. And the thing that I want to kind of go into first is Chuck Grassley. As you know, I sent Chuck Grassley a letter, and I really wish and sincerely hope that he will maybe take a lead from his friend Orrin Hatch and retire and give the job to somebody else, you know. And we're not talking about to give it to somebody in family, you know, try to pawn off somebody that, you know, his family to take the job. Let's open it up and give somebody else a chance, Chuck. I mean, it's time to retire. Please. Please. You've been out there for quite some time, and you know, by God, it's just time. Let's give someone a chance. But I sent him a letter, obviously, and as you know, I asked him to release the testimony that Glenn Simpson made. It was 21 hours of testimony. Glenn Simpson is a co-founder of Fusion GPS, and he talked about the Russian dossier for 21 hours. Evidently, my request is falling on deaf ears here with Chuck Grassley. So thankfully, Glenn Simpson has decided to go ahead and release some information, and he did this through an op-ed in the New York Times, and I've got a link to that article in my show notes. And those show notes, by the way, they've got lots of different links that I'm going to refer to, so feel free to click on those. And they're just a treasure trove of information, those show notes. So this article is by the New York Times, and it's by, as I mentioned, Glenn Simpson and Peter Frisch. And it came out yesterday, January 2nd of 2018. And basically in this, I'm just going to give you the salient points. And Glenn says that we are happy to correct the record. In fact, we already have. Three congressional committees have heard over 21 hours of testimony from our firm, Fusion GPS. In those sessions, we toppled the far right's conspiracy theories and explained how the Washington Free Beacon and the Clinton campaign, the Republican and Democratic funders of our Trump research, separately came to hire us in the first place. Interesting point. I don't know if everyone knows that, but there were Republicans and Democrats that funded this research. Glenn goes on to say that Republicans have refused to release full transcripts of our firm's testimony, even as they selectively leak details to media outlets on the far right. They wouldn't do that, would they? Glenn goes on to say that it's time to share what our company told investigators. We don't believe the Steele dossier was the trigger for the FBI's investigation into Russian meddling. As we told the Senate Judiciary Committee in August, our sources say the dossier was taken so seriously because it corroborated reports the Bureau had received from other sources, including one inside the Trump camp. And interestingly enough, Glenn goes in to say here, this is a follow-the-money thing, folks. We suggested investigators look into the bank records of Deutsche Bank and others that were funding Mr. Trump's businesses. And on December 5th, I'm glad to tell you that the Mueller investigation, as reported by Bloomberg, has subpoenaed those bank records several weeks prior to December 5th. Glenn later goes in this article here, goes on to say that we told Congress that from Manhattan to Sunny Isles Beach, Florida, and from Toronto to Panama, we found widespread evidence that Mr. Trump and his organization had worked with a wide variety of dubious Russians in arrangements that often raise questions about money laundering. Wow. So you're going from Manhattan to Sunny Isles Beach, Florida, which I've never heard of. I'm a Floridian. I'm going to have to look that one up, Google it, MapQuest it, something. I don't even know where it is. From Manhattan to Sunny Isles Beach, Florida, and then from Toronto to Panama. Widespread evidence, he's saying. Widespread evidence that Mr. Trump and his organization had worked with a wide array of dubious Russians. Dubious, dubious, indeed. Wow. That is just interesting, interesting stuff. And he goes on to say that why did Mr. Trump repeatedly seek to do deals in a notoriously corrupt police state that most investors shun? What came back shocked us, he says. Mr. Steele's sources in Russia, who were not paid, by the way, reported on extensive and now confirmed effort by the Kremlin to help elect Mr. Trump president. In talking about following the money here, there's something that came out just today, this morning, and even Steve Bannon, I think, is getting a whiff of what's in the kitchen here, folks. And today, per The Guardian, I believe in an interview that Steve Bannon had with The Guardian today, he says, and I quote, "You realize where this is going." Bannon says, "This is all about money laundering. Mueller chose Senior Prosecutor Andrew Weissman first, and he is a money laundering guy. Their path to effing Trump goes through Paul Manafort, Don Jr., and Jared Kushner. It's as plain as the hair on your face." It's as plain as that, Steve Bannon, and you know what? Trump has nothing to fear if the truth will set him free. If the truth will set him free. But now we're going to go into an article here from Newsweek, and there's a link in my show notes to this article, to this Newsweek article, and I'm going to circle that just to make sure that it's out there for you. But we've talked about some of how the Russians are still at it today, still hacking, still looking to influence different things. And this is interesting because it just goes into this. And this is, again, from a Newsweek article. And I'm going to kind of quote from that article. It says, "The fake comments, that makes the Labor Department the fifth government agency to have fake comments posted on its website. The others that had fake comments were the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the Federal Regulatory Commission, and the Securities and Exchange Commission," according to this article. And what we're talking about today, and we know in going back to net neutrality that there are hundreds, if not thousands, hundreds of thousands of comments that were posted about net neutrality that they have traced back to Russia and Russian sources. So this one that we're talking about today deals with the fiduciary rule. And the fiduciary rule has been under fire from the financial industry, which includes stock brokerages and insurance firms, for hampering business growth and potentially hurting smaller investors, since firms are claiming that they're going to have to raise their fees in response. And for just a second here, we're going to get on the comments that have been posted on the Labor's website in regards to the fiduciary rule. But do you know what the fiduciary rule is all about, by the way? And I was tipped off yesterday on the Rachel Maddow show. She talked about this. But the fiduciary rule deals with the financial industry and the salespeople. You've got your retirement, and you're going to one of these, you know, any one of the financial industry, banks or what have you, to get advice on what you should do with your retirement. Well, the fiduciary rule says that the financial industry and the salesman that's sitting in front of you has to do what's right. That's it. He has to do what's right with your retirement money, which sounds like a damn good rule to me, and I think most of you would agree. But the fiduciary rule is being challenged here by the financial industry, which I mentioned includes stock brokerages and insurance firms, and they're saying that this rule hampers business growth and it's going to hurt the small guy, the small investors. It's going to hurt them because they're going to have to raise fees in response. Since when are you going to have to raise fees for doing what's right? I mean, we're talking about the fiduciary responsibility of a salesperson and his customer, the guy with his retirement savings, and the rule says he's got to do it right, do what's right. The salesman has to do what's right. And how does that equate to your resistance in saying that you're going to have to raise fees in response to a rule that says that salesman is going to have to do what's right? I mean, I don't get it. And I know that nobody said it had to make sense, but it doesn't make sense to me. And this one particularly, you know, really, really rubs me the wrong way, because they shouldn't need a rule that says that salesman is going to do what's right. They shouldn't need a rule, folks. But so what's going on here in background, and I'm going from that article here. In February, Trump issued an executive order that directed the Labor Department to review that rule, the fiduciary rule, and to produce an economic and legal analysis concerning the likely impact of the rule. The rule was first, and this isn't again, the reason why Trump hates it is because it's an Obama rule that he put out. It was first scheduled to take effect in April, but it was then pushed back until June 9th. But the enforcement provisions were not to be fully implemented until January 1st of 2018, according to this article. So they're pushing that back for consideration. It would have taken effect already, but Trump wants to obviously review this rule, and he's soliciting comments on it, which, you know, it's just amazing to me that, you know, on several levels. Number one, the Russians are still, obviously, I think, hampering the comment process that the Labor Department's website, they're hampering that. And then the whole thing about, why are we even debating a rule that we should have anyway, for God's sake? I mean, what a headache. God, when is it going to be over? So the Labor Department, in sum here, is ultimately announcing that the enforcement of the rule would not fully take effect until July 1st of 2019. God, pushed way back. And folks, like I've said time and time again, we don't need to spend billions on a border wall. That's essentially Trump's version of the Great Wall of America. The Great Wall of China, they've got theirs. He wants his, the Great Wall of America. It's a trophy to Donald Trump. You know what? We can fix the damn wall that we've got today, and it'll do just fine, because the real threat here, folks, to America isn't Mexicans looking for work coming through the wall. It's all this hacking. And here again, the comments coming in on this fiduciary rule, that's an example of that. All this hacking from Russia, from North Korea, and to some extent China on our trade secrets. That's the biggest threat that we face today. And nobody, especially Republicans, seem to realize that. They don't seem to get it. And it's just confounding to me. Evidently, hacking an election and using our online public comment process now to affect and sway net neutrality in the fiduciary rule legislation is not enough. I mean, really? That's not enough? What's it going to take here? Are we going to sit back and let all of this hacking on America just get worse before we build better electronic walls to keep this from happening on the scale that we know today? I mean, folks, what about the power grid? What about our airport systems? The list goes on and on and on, things that are vulnerable to being hacked. And I'm telling you right here, we need to get smart and not partisan about this hacking, or they're going to clean our clocks. They're going to do it, and we've got to get smarter. We've got to move quicker than we're moving today to prevent this hacking. And here's an interesting report, folks, right off the back of that. Talk about beefing up our ability to deter hackers. Listen to this for a second. And this is coming from The Washington Post here by way of Axios, and the National Security Agency, which is the largest producer of intelligence in the country, is losing some of its most talented hackers, engineers, and data scientists to more flexible and lucrative jobs in the private sector. And this talent drain could have implications for national security as the U.S. combats threats ranging from North Korea to Russian hackers to ISIS. NSA employees have become disillusioned with the body's leadership, evidently, and the subsequent reorganization. And since 2015, several hundred have left. We're learning. Several hundred have left the National Security Agency. So, yeah, I mean, instead of getting stronger in building our electronic walls, we're moving in the direction of getting weaker. Sad. Donald Trump says, sad. Yes, and by the way, I'm still on the Russian investigation report, and I just wanted to talk about how this hacking is still going on today. It's got so many tendrils into everything that we do. So back to the Russian investigation here, folks. I'm going to shed some light on the Peter Strzok and Lisa Page text. Remember those? The Peter Strzok text. Those were the foundation for a lot of the calls that we've been hearing, not so much recently. But it was the foundation for purging the FBI, for defunding the FBI. And they lifted this one text up, the one about the insurance policy. Remember that? Well, hang in there, folks. I'll be right back. We're going to talk about that. And yes, I was taking a swig of coffee, as you can imagine. I drink way too much of that damn stuff. But they say it's not bad for you, right? They say coffee doesn't kill. Coffee doesn't kill. So, it's my one vice. I'm going to drink it. To hell with it. I don't care. So we're talking about these texts between the FBI officials, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, that led to Peter Strzok's removal from the special counsel, Robert Mueller's Russian probe. And the one that I'm going to narrow in on here is from August 15th, 2016. And I'm quoting Peter Strzok here in the text. He says, "I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, that there is no way he gets elected. But I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40. Well, kaboom. The Republicans seized on that text and they said, see, look, he's acting against Donald Trump. It's like, and he's favoring Hillary Clinton like an insurance policy in the unlikely event that he gets elected. This is an insurance policy that he was using to, you know, put down Donald Trump in favor. He needs to favor Hillary Clinton here. That's the insurance policy. They can't take the risk. And that's what they blew it up into. They called for him needing to be removed, which he was. As soon as Robert Mueller found this out, he removed him from the probe. But folks, hang on a second here. The text, when you look at that text within the context, and they do this so often, they don't look at it within the context of what it was written for. And this is the text, as I mentioned, that the Fox News pundits always point to. Screaming, pointing. This is the insurance policy against electing Trump. And what his text, what Peter's text is referring to is that they can't take the risk Trump won't be elected. They need to give Trump his first classified national security briefing anyway. And according to CNN, the first classified national security briefing that Donald Trump received was on Wednesday, August 16th in New York. So what Peter's talking about isn't that they need an insurance policy to protect against Trump getting elected. They need to tell him, they need to give him his first national security briefing in case he does get elected. He needs this information, and for whatever reason, you don't want Trump coming back and saying they never gave me any updates, they were supposed to, but they didn't. They're going to give him the updates anyway, even if there's no chance that he's going to get elected. They're going to do it, and that's the insurance policy Peter Strzok was referring to. So, boom. I mean, he's out of the investigation, but rather than debate what I just told you with God and country, literally all the Republicans, Fox News, blah, 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 Robert Mueller thought it was best, evidently, to remove him, simply remove him from the probe because he did not want to get into the mud about this. So, I mean, sadly, I mean, here's a good guy, and some of the earlier texts that you look at here about Peter Strzok, his vote was for Kasich. He wanted to vote for Kasich for president. So, I mean, God, I mean, so many ways they take this, they manipulate it, but yeah, I'm telling you, you got to look at the context, and that's the context around that text for the insurance policy. So, just a quick recap here. I'm going to switch gears, still on the Russian investigation, but we're going to talk about the three major leaks by Russia that we've had here. I'm just going to recap these because I know that time goes on, the news stories come and go, and just to kind of put this back into a nice little capsule for everybody, the first leak that we're talking about here was the Hillary Clinton email archive. And this came out of WikiLeaks on March 16th of 2016. According to the website here, right from WikiLeaks, they launched a searchable archive for over 30,000 emails and email attachments and sent them, or attachments that were sent to and from Hillary Clinton's private email server while she was Secretary of State. So that's the first hacking bit that went on. The second one was on July 22nd of 2016, and that was the Democratic National Committee email leak, which was a collection of Democratic National Committee emails stolen by Russian intelligence agency hackers and published again on WikiLeaks. That's number two. The third one came out on October 7th. And you know what else happened on October 7th? The Access Hollywood tape was released. We all know about that. The Access Hollywood tape was released. And folks, 1 hour later, WikiLeaks dumps the Podesta emails. 1 hour later. It's amazing. So that was number three. That was number three. And the next thing I'm going to talk about here is just an interesting article that, again, is in my show notes. And it's from The Guardian on April 17th. And it explains how British agents tipped off the United States late in 2015 and the summer of 2016. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, folks, is that this explains a lot of the disdain that Donald Trump had for intelligence agencies, both here and abroad, as he would possibly view them very early on as subversive to his campaign. And then you say, well, hold it. How did he know that the British agents were tipping off the United States late in 15 and the summer of 16? And to that I say that Donald Trump, through cooperative senators, congressmen, people in the know, I think he knew that the information was coming in. So this article, which again is on my show notes, is an interesting read into how that information was flowing into the United States. Again, late 15, early summer of 16. And I think it could explain, you know, not only the disdain for intelligence agencies. I never got that, man. And he's still putting them down. Putting them down with one hand, bringing them up occasionally on the other. But overall, you know, he has a lot of disdain for intelligence agencies. This might explain it. And not only that, but it might explain his lingering chill towards Great Britain, Germany, and Australia, even to today. And for God's sakes, remember that call from Malcolm Turnbull from Australia, the PM of Australia, where he was congratulating him on his win. And that reportedly ended abruptly with one of them slamming the phone down. So, yeah, there's a chill. There's a chill going on. And from when we're talking about that chill, let's go back to December 22nd, and this is some of this information is coming from CNN, and it says here, remember that decision that Donald Trump made to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Well, that was condemned in a UN vote by 128 countries. 128, wow. So there were 9 countries that supported the vote. So those, I think this is the latest bit that we can look at here that says, who are our friends? And I realize that they're still friends, but they're somewhat chillier than they were. And it's not just a cold front that's chilling our allies. It's Donald Trump. But in any event, let's look at that vote. The 9 countries that voted with us. Here we go. Guatemala, Honduras, Israel, Marshall Islands, Micronesia, Nauru, Palau, and Togo. That's it. Yep. According to that vote, those are the 9 friends that we have. Oh, well, including ourselves. Those are the 8 friends that we've got. And interesting in all of this here, folks, is that after that vote, a save-the-date invitation from U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, was sent to 64 countries who did not support the resolution. And the save-the-date invitation was a invitation to attend a reception to thank them for their friendship to the United States. What? I mean, is this passive-aggressive or what? So these 64 countries who do not support the resolution, they have a save-the-date invitation from the U.S. ambassador to attend a reception, food, drinks, and all that, to thank you for your friendship to the United States? I mean, come on. God. Nobody said it had to make sense, right? Nobody said. I'm just going to move on. I mean, nobody said it all had to make sense. So the next thing that we're going to talk about briefly here, folks, is a witness who testified before a federal grand jury special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation has said that President Donald Trump is not getting a fair shake because the jury appears to be left-leaning. And the witness here evidently told the New York Post Page 6 that the demographics of the jury are strongly stacked against the president, comparing them to far-left groups. And this is coming from thinkprogress.org. The quote is that the grand jury room looks like a Bernie Sanders rally, this witness has said. Maybe they found these jurors in central casting or at a Black Lives Matter rally in Berkeley, the witness told the New York Post columnist Richard Johnson, who, by the way, the columnist who wrote this story, Richard Johnson, who previously served as a Miss Universe pageant judge during Donald Trump's time at the helm. So he was a pageant judge for the Miss Universe. Nice. Nice, nice. I see it now. Thank you, Richard Johnson, for that shameless reporting. And not only that, but they noted that this witness noted that 11 of the jurors are African Americans and 2 were wearing peace t-shirts. The witness said there was only 1 white male in the room and he was a prosecutor. Wow. So you're telling me here that of the 20 jurors, 11 were African American. I'm okay with that. Doesn't bother me, and it shouldn't bother anybody. So that, but what does that mean? The other 9 jurors were women? Or they weren't white Anglo-Saxon Protestants? What does that mean about the other 9? I mean, this is Washington, D.C., folks, where most of the Mueller subjects of the investigation are. That's where the jury pool lives. I mean, that's where this is being conducted for a very, very good reason. And even Alan Dershowitz, who's just sort of evidently rotting from the core out, he says that he doesn't blame the fact that there's an impaneled grand jury. You have to impanel the grand jury to get subpoena power. But Alan Dershowitz is saying, but where he impaneled it? Washington, D.C. I got an issue with that. Well, I got an issue with you too, Dershowitz. I mean, what the next thing that you expect Mueller to do here is the next call from the Republican Party is going to be to move the investigation to someplace in South Dakota? It's endless. Endless. So, interestingly enough, changing a story here. We're going to go into how Trump is threatening to cut aid to Palestinians. Trump is mad about the Palestinians. He's saying that the Palestinian leadership hasn't shown any appreciation or respect or a willingness to negotiate a peace deal. I want you to hear that. Trump doesn't think they're showing a willingness to negotiate a peace deal. And Donald Trump sent out two tweets yesterday. They came out. And Donald Trump is saying that it's not only Pakistan that we paid billions of dollars to for nothing, but also many other countries and others. As an example, we pay the Palestinians hundreds of millions of dollars a year and get no appreciation or respect. He's pulling a Rodney Dangerfield here, folks. We're not getting any respect. They don't even want to negotiate a long overdue peace treaty with Israel. We have taken Jerusalem, the toughest part of the negotiation, off the table, but Israel for that would have to pay more. Blah, 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 blah. So he's claiming here that they don't want to negotiate a peace deal anymore. And that's right. The United States has played a big role in the negotiation of peace between the two countries. But folks, that's coming to an end because they don't want to work with Trump. They don't want to work with him. It's not that they don't want to negotiate a peace deal here. From The Guardian, on December 22nd, and I'm quoting here from the article, I'm reading from this. It says, the Palestinian president Mahmoud Abbas has said that he would no longer accept any peace plan that proposed by the United States, instead calling on France and Europe to play a stronger role in peace efforts between Israel and the Palestinians. So, folks, it's not that they don't want to continue to negotiate peace. They just don't want to do it with Donald Trump. Do you think he gets it? I'm sure he does. He just doesn't want to admit it. But they don't want to. They do not want to work with him. They're going to go around us. We've left a vacuum in the peace process because of Donald Trump's actions and his attitude, and they're going around that. That vacuum is probably going to be filled now by France and Europe. Not only that, but lastly here, we've got so-called Rocket Man, who I believe is crazy like a fox. You know, the man is not nuts. And you're seeing the exact same trend here, folks, as with Mahmoud Abbas. They don't want to deal with the U.S. because Trump is involved. Nobody wants to deal with Donald Trump. And it leaves a vacuum when that happens. And the vacuum gets filled by someone else. And I'm going to read parts of an article here from businessinsider.com. And the businessinsider.com website is saying, and I'm quoting here, that they're quoting Unification Minister Cho Myung-gong of South Korea. They're quoting him when they say, we look forward to candidly discussing interests from both sides face-to-face with North Korea, along with the North's participation in the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics. And he goes on to say that, I repeat, the government is open to talking with North Korea, regardless of time, location, and form. And I think that's great. I don't have a problem with that. I don't ever have a problem with diplomacy. And that's exactly what we need today. And the offer is landed from South Korea after New Year's Day speech previously that was made by Kim Jong-un, who said that he was open to dialogue with Seoul, South Korea, and for North Korean athletes to possibly take part in the Winter Games, but he persistently declared North Korea as a nuclear power. And it's interesting. And in fact, just today, folks, North Korea and South Korea evidently have spoken directly on a phone line that hasn't been used since 2016. They've got this hotline between the two countries. And this is from CNN, and they're saying that the rare diplomatic contact, which was initiated by the North, comes after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un expressed a desire for his country's athletes to take part in next month's Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. So, I mean, this is actually a very good thing, you know, to see that the tensions are coming down a notch. And what's happening here is that Donald Trump, you know, he made a big deal out of saying that he's not going to pander to Obama's policy of strategic patience. But like I've said, He's just replaced that with strategic tolerance. He doesn't really have a plan to sit down, evidently, with North Korea and negotiate. So I think it's a great thing that North Korea is willing to sit down with South Korea. I mean, they're border to border. I mean, if these two people can't work it out, who can? I think it's great. And you can say that they're bypassing the U.S., but the de-escalation of the tension here is fantastic. So that's good to see. But it's another example of how they're kind of working the United States out of the deal. There you have it. So just a correction to last week's episode. When I was talking about Donald Trump owning the pageant and walking through the dressing rooms as reported by the Rolling Stone magazine, I mentioned that he was half naked. Well, no, I meant to say the ladies were half naked. We all know that, but I'm just correcting that anyway. Yeah, it's not a Trump half naked is not a a picture that we want to go to anyway, for that matter. But well, folks, I want to thank you for joining us. And this version of Rocket Man is available at ironhorsebluegrass.com. If you want the full copy, feel free to go there and check them out. I think they're also on iTunes. But I want to thank you for tuning in. And yes, we'll be back with more fun. It just never ends. Till then, folks, tell your friends about us. RustedCulture.com.
I'm a Rocket Man.
And here's Rocket Man to take us out.
Rocket Man.
And we'll see you next time. Frank Ebersole.
Mars ain't the kind of place to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as ice.